Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 779, The King's Woman.
Fair?
Yeah, no, totally fair.
So I guess let's, before we get too far afield, go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is... Oh, sorry, I was going to introduce you.
I was going to introduce you. By episode 800, we might maybe yeah. We'll finally get the rotation thing.
This is Tom. And joining us...
This is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hello.
We'll fix all that in post, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be nice and smooth.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So before we dig in, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, iHeart, TuneIn, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. Spotify, should throw that one out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just re-signed a $250 million deal for 3 years.
God.
How come nobody needed mine or Joe's signature?
Yeah.
Like, what is,
weird.
What's going on
well,
here?
Well, first of all, if we get a deal for $250 million, do you want me to wait or do you want me to sign that contract?
Sign that sumbitch.
If we get a deal for $1 million, do you want me to wait or do you want me to sign the contract?
Sign it.
Because it's better than negative thousands.
Just put an X on it.
Yes.
So,
that's so much money.
It yeah. is.
How much? I mean,
I just think
honestly,
it's crazy.
How much ad revenue? Like,
well,
and
the
how
crazy
is that
thing
profitable?
Is, but Spotify is like, we have to lay off 19,000 people, and then Joe Rogan. Here's 250 yeah. million. It's like,
but I mean, like, how many? I don't even, honestly, I don't know how. It's kind of like digital streaming.
Right.
Like, I don't yeah. know what their numbers are, yeah, but how do you quantify that?
I mean, you quantify it by CPM. So Rogan is, I mean, he's almost always the number one podcast.
That's true.
Even when he was
he a ground floor guy, or was he after like the? Or was
I mean,
he, one of
he
the first
wasn't.
Ones?
He wasn't like the people. One of the people doing podcasts in like 2002,
like Corolla.
But he's pretty early.
Pretty early.
Yeah, okay. He's pretty early.
Like, I remember it was Corolla and Kevin Smith.
Let's just put it this way: he had hair when the podcast started,
but
he was still doing news radio.
But so that. Like his show's almost always number one, and it's only available on Spotify at
that's
the moment.
That's true.
So like he's basically doing that with one arm tied behind his back.
Yeah,
right.
That's fair.
And I am not a Rogan guy, but I mean you can't deny the numbers. And then on top of it, from an advertising standpoint, most podcasts are like 45 minutes to an hour.
Sure.
Not this one.
No.
But
trust me, we find out about it.
Yeah. But his is 3 hours and it's daily. So
is it really
daily?
3 hours?
Is it daily? I thought that was daily.
Oh,
I never
no
paid attention.
Idea.
I don't pay attention to it.
I don't know about that.
Are they really?
So.
Do those pods really go 3 hours?
They're like, yeah. I know they're 3 hours.
They're 3 hours. I don't think they're daily. I really don't.
I thought it was he was doing it like a radio show.
Mm-mm. Oh, man.
No, I think they're either weekly or a couple of weeks. He reminds me
a lot of Stern in that, like, I don't really care about what he has to say in between the interview, but for whatever reason.
Two episodes a week.
Okay, yeah.
So, still, that's a lot.
That's a lot of content.
And he makes a lot of money.
But he,
But
keep in mind, 3 hours, 2 hours a week. That's like doing six episodes a week. So
that's
from
true.
An ad inventory standpoint, he's creating a lot of content. So there's a lot of – so his CPMs are high, which is cost per thousand. Mm-hmm. So he has high CPMs, and he's got a long show, and he's doing it twice a week. So he has a lot more ad inventory, and he gets – a ton of listeners.
That's true. That's true. But he reminds me, like, I have no interest in what Stern has to say outside of an interview.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, Stern and Rogan gets people to start talking.
That's the thing is they don't, like, when you go on those shows, you know you're going to be talking about stuff. You don't go in and the publicist doesn't say, don't talk about this. Don't, like, if you go on,
you know
they're
going
to ask you questions. And I've said that for a long time. Stern is one of the best interviewers
around.
Because people just feel comfortable. Like, they go there and he just asks them and they're compelled to say whatever. And
that would be so good.
Private Parts?
Yeah.
So good.
So anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, shameless plugs. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra.
Did you record something?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, so we've got the latest episode is the Thor episode. We've got two more in our Marvel Phase 1, and Matt and I recorded a box office of 2023 recap. So if you're missing the box office report, we did like an hour, 20 minutes. That was our quick 30-minute episode. It was an hour and 30 minutes on the box office report. So go sign up for Patreon. Check it out, and there's a ton of stuff on there.
Okay, you're a regular Joe Rogan.
There you go, right?
Without the listenership or
if
the
Kelly
money.
Can find certain files, maybe Steve Kelly will show up on our Patreon episode.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm still, I've teased it before, but Tom and I did a test pilot for Real Spoilers over 10 years ago, and I just have no idea where
I
it
have
was.
No recollection of having
Tom
done that.
It was just the two of you?
Yeah, it was before you were ever
I don't,
a naming
are you,
contention.
Are you sure maybe you can't find that file because it doesn't exist?
You came over and recorded in the basement. We did one of those dollar store movies because our original podcast idea, if you, the listeners haven't heard this before, was to get those dollar store movies that are like public domain and they're dollar DVDs and no one's ever heard of them, but they have like Frank Sinatra's in them or Bob Hope or whatever. We were going to just like not riff on them, but we were going to review movies no
like
one's ever heard
of. We were going to call it dollar store DVDs.
Yeah.
Trademark it.
Yeah.
So Tom came over. Do you remember mini PCs? This is called like an PC.
Yeah, I remember those.
Those tiny little things. And we had, I think, one microphone hooked up between the two of us. I don't think we had two at that point. And we reviewed. It would have been whatever.
We just gathered around it like Paul McCartney and George Harrison exactly. on the Ed Sullivan show.
Yeah.
When we fell in love.
And,
it's good.
And I've checked. I have two of those little mini PCs, and one of them someone gave to me, and I'm like, did I end up recording it after I got that one? Or I have my original still, and the files just aren't on the hard drive.
We did episodes,
thank God.
Right? You and I did, like, two guys, one remote.
Those were on Review STL, I think.
Were
those
they?
Those were on the Review STL
okay.
feed.
Yeah.
We did two guys, one remote. Which I thought was a pretty funny
name. That's a good title. It still works.
And we Only God Forgives broke us, though.
No, we did. We'd Only God Forgives. Didn't we do the Keanu Reeves one, 47 Ronin?
Did he?
Did
I just know that Only,
the
God,
only
Forgives
God Forgives was bad.
Was a tough one.
That was not a good movie.
Drive is a hard act to follow.
It,
so.
And he did not follow it. Veered off course.
Anyway, so.
Like this podcast.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a ton of Patreon content, and we're actually still looking for more from the archives. But for now, there's new stuff. Go check it out.
Yeah. So, and then finally, don't forget, you can watch all of these over on YouTube. Yeah. So we'd love to have you there, and you can stare into our.
And
eyes.
In Saltburn, Joe recreates the dance from the end, so make sure to tune in.
And Kevin recreates the bathtub scene.
No, I was the stand-in.
For who?
For the bathtub.
I think that's worse somehow.
I gotta tell you.
I don't know. Pays really well.
You know, we should honestly, I know we've had sweatshirts and t-shirts. We should like have like limited edition t-shirts harkening back to things we have said, and the cum tub should absolutely have been t-shirt for a very limited amount of time.
I don't think anyone's going to walk around with a T-shirt that says "Come
You don't
tub.
Know that.
You'd unless, be surprised.
Unless, yeah, they're going to some sort of sex party.
Elvis Presley is a pedophile. Put that on a shirt.
Maybe we could make us some kind of double entendre.
Hey, I'm sure we could.
So that the fans would know what it means.
Matt Bosler is very creative.
This is a shirt that says "Ha ha ha."
Josh Brolin.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, anyway,
a picture of a peach pie.
Hey, now wait a minute. That's the second time Tosh has stolen one of her jokes. Maybe he does listen.
What did he steal?
Remember,
this time?
Because I sent Tom a clip because made the thing. I think in French it goes like ho ho ho. I don't know if you can say that. And then I sent these guys a couple weeks ago. He made a Paul Walker joke, and I go, I think Tosh is a secret Real Spoilers listener.
How great would that be if he's like, by the way,
these are like some
stealing our material for years.
I love if you haven't listened to. Daniel Tosh, who did Tosh.0, has a podcast called Tosh Show, and it's great. He interviews pretty much normal people. He interviews his chef, his car guy, his exercise
I've already
woman.
Checked out when you're like, he interviewed his
a normal
chef
guy
and his
chef,
car
yeah.
guy.
No, but not celebrities. He interviews, but they're employees. They're, you know what I mean? And it's really interesting to hear their point of view, and he's just hilarious.
So. I had, I will never be able to prove it, but... do you know Andy Borowitz? He's a writer for The New Yorker.
I don't.
Okay, but he's very well known. I think he was the co-creator of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh.
So he's, well, he's...
Okay. Did he steal your story for that show?
Yeah, yes. Oh. Yeah,
does he do something called The Borowitz Report?
Yes, yeah. That's him.
Yeah.
And I think he stole one of my jokes one time, and I don't know how. But so here's the joke, and here's what happened. So this was when...
Allegedly, right? Is that something? Because he seems like a real person.
Well,
that's true.
Well, and I said, I think.
Yeah, that's okay, fair. That's fair.
It was when the Transformers Dark of the Moon came out. That's the good one, right?
The good one.
And in my review, this is when I was still writing reviews, so this was for Toasted Rav. Oh, that's how long ago it was.
That's such a great name.
And Review STL at one point. When Toasted Ravs went under, Tom was a writer for Review STL.
I did, and then we started doing podcasts, and I was like, it's easier to
hell with it.
And I said, Steve, can you write stuff?
Yeah. So I said in my review of Transformers, I said, this is easily the best of the Transformers movies. I'm like, but that's kind of like being the smartest Kardashian.
It's right? a good joke.
Yeah. And so he tweeted, the new Transformers movie was a lot of fun, but... saying it's the best of the three is like being the smartest Kardashian. So not only did he make the same joke, but he made it about the same thing. Hang on.
Okay.
But wait, there's more. So I had a friend of mine.
He left dash Tom O'Keefe in the message and forgot to delete that.
And so I had a friend of mine tweet at him because I didn't even see it.
This is sounding vaguely familiar of something that the Real Spoilers crew had to go through.
Yeah. She tweeted at him and she's like, that line sounds very similar to the line in this review and linked to it, and then he deleted the tweet.
Oh. Wow.
Oh.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know
Or maybe
how.
It was courtacy and didn't want to start.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
It could be. I don't know. Like, in all fairness, I do not know how a guy from The New Yorker
would read Toasted Rabs.
Would stumble across my review, right?
I got to tell you. So
but that being said, that's a very specific reference. And not only, like, I think a lot of people could land on the smartest Kardashian joke. Like, but to make it about the exact same thing, that's where I'm like,
I do have a theory that, like, hire big-time writers, artists, whoever – I think they might go to, like, let's look at this video.
Places no one will look.
Let's go to, like, this local club and look at this band that nobody's heard. I'd be like, that's a pretty good song.
I do worry about that all the time with even movie scripts or whatever. When things seem a little too familiar and you're like, how many people are desperate for ideas and they take it from someone that will never, you know, that will just go, oh, man, that sucks. I had that idea. Never know they were the one.
It was their idea.
I mean, like, joke theft comes up a lot, right?
Yeah, especially with stand-ups,
right?
Man.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And if you see someone in a club,
Carlos Mencia popped back up about him stealing jokes from people and, like, did it on stage. And Rogan
led the charge against him.
And that guy's career is over.
Yeah.
So,
but
hopefully there's a director whose career is over after this movie. Oh, I can't wait for that to happen.
But so anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in.
God, this was a slog.
This movie had no business being 2 hours and 20 minutes. And what's frustrating about this movie, and overall, like, I think I was okay with it.
Yeah,
but I thought it was entertaining.
But like, this is a rollicking 90-minute movie jam-packed into 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, like, the thing is that I was entertained by the movie, but it was trying to do something that didn't land. It was trying to be so clever and do so many reveals that it just fell flat, whereas it could have been a very entertaining, silly movie, but without having to pack it in like, look at how clever we are.
And here's the thing is I think Matthew Vaughn, who did Layer Cake, which I think is a fantastic little flick.
He was
X-Men First Class.
Guy Ritchie's cinematographer?
Second director?
Okay, maybe. Second.
But he comes from the Guy Ritchie school.
Oh, assistant director, yep.
Yeah. But he revitalized the X-Men franchise.
Yeah.
Like, that franchise is in the trash, and then he does First Class, and it brings everything back. I think Kick-Ass, for all of its, I think looking back on it in 2024... maybe not the best, but I think that
Kick-Ass
movie
is great.
I think the first one.
Yeah.
Second one's terrible.
The second one's bad, but
the first one's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a bit.
That first one's great. I think it's a great comic book movie.
Yeah. Yes. And then there was something. What did he do? Oh, the first Kingsman.
Yeah.
No, Wanted was the guy that did Daybreak.
Oh, I thought he was Wanted too.
No.
Okay. Didn't he also do Days of Future Past? Or
yeah, he was really talented.
Wait, did he do Days of Future
over
or just First Class? Yeah.
He took over for Singer.
X-Men
he made the best Fox X-Men movie, which was Days of Future Past.
Oh. Are you sure that's not Singer?
No, Singer's Apocalypse. He came back to do Apocalypse, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I'm checking right now. I'm pretty sure he did. Do the Googles.
Yeah.
But
okay, so he didn't direct it. He did produce it, though. And I guess he's credited for writing the story.
Oh, what?
Thank you. That was Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer did Days of Future Past?
Yes, he did. And then he drove. So not only did he drive that. Oh, no, I guess Brett Ratner drove that franchise into the ground. But then Bryan Singer's like, I got it. And then did it again with Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix.
But Future Past is the one with the slow motion thing? Because he's going back to find his younger.
Then Bryan Singer did that. Just blew your mind right
you
there.
You did, because that's so confusing
to me. It's crazy. Bryan Singer run the X-Men franchise into the ground, he also ran the Superman franchise into the ground, and then Zack Snyder picked up the ball
and he's also and a huge scumbag.
Oh, no, yes.
X-Men First Class is directed by Matthew Vaughn.
Right.
But Days of Future Past is Bryan Singer.
Okay.
Yeah, well, then there was some weird.
I haven't seen all of those movies, believe it or not.
We've done them for the show.
No, some of the other ones, I don't think I ever saw Future Past.
We did it for the show.
I'm pretty sure we did it for the show.
We absolutely did that for the show.
I know there's maybe it's I can't
X3.
If it was in the last 10 years,
I don't think I've seen X3.
That's that's a good thing.
Yeah,
but if it was in the last 10 years and
yeah, Days of Future Past is where Wolverine
Future Past was literally 10 years ago.
Where Wolverine goes into the past,
okay,
and like has he's like a younger version of himself, and he has to stop whatever
maybe,
and then Apocalypse is Oscar Isaac as Apocalypse, and that's terrible. And then they're just like, let's do the Dark Phoenix real fast. And then that was also really bad.
So you know what must have happened, because he's a writer on it. And I think for some reason, Singer had to come back because Vaughn couldn't do it. And I wonder, was he doing Kick-Ass or something? I wonder.
Or the Kingsman, which is the other one that I think is really good.
Which sucks, because First Class was so good. Mm-hmm. And then I remember like he was going to direct it, and then he must have left to do that, which was like, this one's so good. And then it ended up, I guess because he wrote it, it was still a good movie. Because Future Past is good.
Future Past is very good.
And then Apocalypse is
not good.
Not good.
No. And now it is crazy to me that, again, sorry for the guy that commented on YouTube about getting to the movie, because that ain't gonna happen, bro.
Oh, we explained that. It's just not a thing.
But Marvel has the rights to the X-Men, and they have done nothing.
Well, I mean, they just got them back, and they're waiting to do it right. Like,
oh, man.
Marvel... MCU's
I guess they're doing Deadpool.
Yeah, MCU's in this fallow period, and they have to do this right, and they're not going to just introduce the X-Men during after Ant-Man Quantumania. like they're going to make sure that this is the MCU they're going with, and it's good movies. And so I do think Deadpool's coming up this year.
Yes.
I think they're letting people like want to see these movies again.
That's fair.
And then boom, hit them with X-Men.
And then come back with a property that
Everybody loves.
Everybody's been wanting to see, and you know, because at that point it will have been quite a period of time.
25 years since for X-Men what? Started. Can you believe that?
Yeah, but like, how long has it been since the last X-Men movie? Like, it's
2019, 2018?
Yeah, it's probably been.
I just remember Sophie Turner on that cover.
Yeah, right. It's probably been like 5 or 6 years. Yeah,
yeah, not long enough.
But I just mean, isn't that crazy that 2000 is when? I mean, Blade was
99.
It was 99. Mm-hmm. That was 98. But Blade came out, and then X-Men came out, and that was the start of like, oh, superhero movies are cool
again. You know? Then they weren't.
but like that really started it, and to think that that was 25 years ago.
Yeah, those kids are in college now.
Nuts.
That's the or they're graduating college, I guess.
But this movie, I think, is one of those movies that we talk about, a popcorn movie, check your brain at the door kind of thing. I had fun with this movie, but I do concede that they thought it was a little clever, went on a little bit too long. But I enjoyed it. I thought this is a fun movie, and it did some really original things that I've not seen before, so I thought it was clever.
Oh, man. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
Is they showed a Guy Ritchie trailer before this movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you do that? Like, that. It's these guys are cut from this. Guy Ritchie and Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
That's what they're cut from the same cloth. Guy Ritchie is a better director.
Sure. But that is how advertising works, though.
But then they.
What are we going to play our movie before?
But then they also have this one of the stars of this movie in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like. Give me that guy, because this Henry Cavill is boring as shit.
Speaking of trailers, one thing I do want to give this movie credit for is they did a masterful job of subterfuge, not letting you know the plot.
That's
in
fair.
The trailer. They basically showed 20 to 30 minutes, the first 20 to 30 minutes of the movie in the trailer, and that's it. Because then it just goes off on its own course,
so,
for better or worse.
I saw a tweet someone, Max Foyzy showed me from 2018 from Deadspin.
Okay.
Okay.
And the tweet was like, Matthew Vaughn has gotten a green light for his new film about a female spy novelist who forgets she's actually a spy.
In 2018,
I saw that a tweet spoiled this movie.
Yeah.
And no one really
noticed it.
I had no clue.
Yeah,
huh?
It's just funny because they made such a big deal about it. The whole marketing campaign was, who is Argyle?
Yeah,
and like they told you. Like, it's 7 years ago. Wow.
But no, Steve, you're absolutely right. I think that they, to their credit, is they don't tell you anything. They just give you, like, here's Sam Rockwell, here's, you know, Bryce Dallas Howard and Henry Cavill and John Cena.
It's also interesting, if you look at the main poster.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, that, like, the two leads aren't even featured prominently on the poster.
Right.
It's Henry Cavill in the middle, and then on either side, what is Samuel L. Jackson
and Dua Lipa.
Okay, yeah, then you get Bryce Dallas Howard
like on the outskirts of the poster.
It's like a triangle.
Yeah, she's like third from the center.
Yeah, it's like Henry Cavill and dead
Sam
center.
Sam Rockwell's gotta be in there somewhere.
And then right and left is Dua Lipa and Samuel L. Jackson. And then right and left again, as you go work your way out, is Bryce Dallas Howard on one side, Sam Rockwell on the other.
Interesting.
And then like more, it keeps going for like three or four more people. Yeah,
okay,
that's billing for you, I guess.
Who was Dua Lipa?
She was the woman blonde at the very beginning.
You can't miss her.
With Henry Cavill and
I don't know what that gal looks like.
I like when somebody mentioned to me about Dua Lipa, I was like, oh, was she in the movie?
That's exactly that's the other thing about this. This cast is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, it is like.
It's the Gary Marshall method.
Yeah. Very much
of, like, you know, we need you for 3 days.
Right.
Can you come in and do this?
Here's $1 million.
Richard E. Grant in one scene.
Oh.
One scene in the beginning.
Yes, yes, yes.
She calls him at his desk, and he's like. You know,
go this way.
Whatever. It's like, what? Why? I mean, because first of all, I go, oh, Richard E. Grant and everything. This is great.
Yeah,
we just talked about him last week.
Yes.
Love that this guy's getting work. And then the movie went on and it ended and I go, wait, what? Where was Richard E. Grant?
And he's not even a real character.
I guess he's the book boss or whatever.
Yeah, he's the book version of Bryan Cranston.
Right, but
is what irritated me about the Kira character was she's the only, and I get why they did it,
but
she's the only one that they don't recast.
Right.
Like, that doesn't have a book counterpart.
Well, there's another one, because Henry Cavill shows up at the end.
Yeah, kind of a surprise way.
Yeah.
But, yes. So, I think, also, here's the thing. So, this movie's ridiculous, right? But it's okay to have some fun with a movie.
I totally agree with you.
But the thing is, and this is what I think makes it okay to be ridiculous is that this movie is about a book about spies. And I think if you look at it from the viewpoint that when the ridiculous stuff is happening, that's Bryce Dallas Howard imagining what she's going to put in her book. It's not really happening like that. Because in one scene at the end, when they're doing the
crazy
the ballet,
dance, yeah.
Yes,
I know exactly
it cuts
where
to
you're
Bryan
going.
Cranston looking at the monitor, and they're in a circle shooting, just standing.
Right.
But they had just gone from him, her holding him over her head. So the whole movie plays better if you realize the stuff isn't like, that's just ridiculous. It's like, she's writing a ridiculous spy novel, and that's her imagination seeing
okay. This movie's still too long.
Right. But it's fun when you see that it's like, yes, this is just an author imagining. Because in the movie, she does it the whole time, flashing between her imagination, seeing Argyle doing things. And so I watched the movie knowing, oh, well, that's fun because it's silly and it's not supposed to be realistic.
So explain the hockey, or the skating scene.
That's where I was going.
I don't think it really went down like that. That was her. They did get out of it, but was her.
I will say, if that's what they're doing, one, I think they should have made it a little bit more obvious. Two, I think we should have seen what the skating scene looked like.
I will give her props that she, if that was her on those blades,
100% was not her.
She knew what the hell she was, because she moved like an ice skater, like she was moving.
That's a deep fake. But
Then I got to tell you, if that's the way we're going to go with things, I'm okay with that.
I think it's fun. Yeah, I mean, like the
deep fake.
Oh.
Like, if we're going to have a stunt person.
Well, yeah, because you got to, I mean. And it's better than when you freeze frame the movie.
It is my favorite thing in the world.
A different skin color and a different, like, so obvious.
And I'm going to get you, sucker.
That's the joke. Yeah,
T2 is the worst. There's the scene when he's riding the motorcycle, like, through the viaduct or whatever, and it is absolutely not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know what?
The guy is significantly smaller. Yeah. He, you know, he's got like a goatee. I don't know.
But you know what? It's because he didn't have a twin. Everyone else had twins.
That's what he did his best. Okay.
Then how did he make twins?
Yeah, I saw that movie.
They look just like.
They should have cut
another,
just
right?
Danny DeVito on a.
See, that would have been perfect.
Everyone been like, man, that I can't believe Arnold's
but
doing his own
that
stunts.
Stuff you've seen with Linda Hamilton's sister in the fake mirror.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's brilliant.
Linda Hamilton's sister.
Yes, yeah. when Arnold Schwarzenegger, when they're digging his eye out, her sister is on the other side of a cutout mirror mimicking, and you would never know unless you saw it. It's so masterful. And they flip the shot, and the sisters switch places, and the other one is the one in the background, and then Linda Hamilton's the one doing the mirror.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, for practical effects and doubles.
Yeah, these are again at the end, very end, when the T-1000 mimics Sarah Connor.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so they're like,
dang, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And that's the kind of stuff that I think is great, right? Like the amount and the CG in this is terrible.
It's bad.
It's bad.
I was stunned. I mean, just dare I say flabbergasted when I went to Wikipedia and saw that this was a $200 million. Honestly, like as I'm watching
a streaming movie,
watching the movie, I'm giving it a pass in real time because I'm like, oh, well, this is probably like an $80 million movie. And I'm like, for an $80 million movie,
not bad.
There's a lot on the screen.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm like, $200
million? That's dumb.
Especially when you compare it to like Godzilla minus one. You see the effects that they made on a $15 million budget.
Yeah. They say the budget's even is lower.
Really?
Like the director was like, we didn't have, I don't know where they're getting that number. We didn't have $15 million. But to your point, though.
Like, oh, they're just putting that in the spreadsheet so I don't hit back end. Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah
that's
exactly it.
Yeah.
But that movie looks incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely
well,
incredible.
Well, there's a lot. The creator, which you were not on that episode, but the creator looks incredible. What was
that,
like a $40 million movie? Right?
Remember?
Yeah.
The creator looks
$40 million, and it looks like a Star Wars level.
Give that guy Supergirl.
Yeah.
That honestly, like if they're gonna moneyball it,
Gareth Edwards, awesome.
He's great.
I mean, he did Rogue One, and look how
sort of.
What?
Didn't Terry Gilliam do some of that?
Well, definitely wasn't Terry Gilliam.
Somebody else came in and finished.
But he's got the credit on it.
Does he
did most of the movie. Yeah. Someone came in and did
about Solo?
No. Someone came in and did reshoots.
Yeah, somebody came in and did
Gareth Edwards is credited.
Okay,
he did most
of
the movie. It's just they came in and changed some stuff with the ending or connected
to
New Hope or something.
Okay.
But that guy's great.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. But see, I also said this is a stylized, this is the crazy scenes are all in the book. It's all imagination. It's crazy.
It's not, well, that's,
so I kind of just took it as.
I'm just talking about like when you're watching Dua Lipa ride a motorcycle, it looks like she looks like a toy.
Yeah.
Like it just the way she's not even the model isn't even moving.
It's
right.
Green screen. Yeah, I mean it's clearly terrible.
Like when and now we have the third movie where a hero has to get in a car chase with a weird silly car.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is the third time we've seen that. It was
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible, Indiana Jones,
Indiana
and now
Jones.
This. Yeah.
Okay.
But
both
like
done way better.
Yeah. It, but yeah, when this
it was a Fast and Furious.
That's exactly where I was thinking. Yes.
Yeah. What when they do the car going through the like it just looks like somebody like a kid picked up a car.
I don't think
like,
you can
it
ever.
It doesn't have the right physicality of how it's moving.
I don't think
space.
You can shoot those from above. I think that's the problem. Like if you're going to do that, you've got to shoot them kind of like cameras on the side of the cars and gives you an idea of like the turning. But when you shoot it like looking down, that's and you're going to use CG. It just looks off. Like, nothing moves right.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I watched it thinking that doesn't look right. But again, and then it cuts to her reading a book. Like I just know that's in a book, and it's ridiculous. So I, to me, film thematically, like anything that's in the book, if it looks wonky, to me is just like, well, yeah, we're just it's someone's imagination reading a book. The CG doesn't have to look realistic, and I think that also helped me differentiate between real world and book world.
Yeah.
Was book world was crazy and the stunts were crazy, and you know what I mean. So to me, I was able to enjoy it. Where usually I do pick apart the CG, but that's because that's all book stuff.
Just, I would allow for that if this wasn't a $200 million.
There's
movie.
No reason that right? something like, should look this bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
At $200 million. Yeah.
That's true.
And I know Apple's got money to burn.
I'm just
Jesus.
Like, somebody needs to do a forensic accounting to see where the other $170 million
went. Well, I think the cast, you know, so this is a streaming movie, which means they don't get back end. So I think they have to pay all these actors up front a lot of money.
You think that you, and I'm not saying this to be.
Well, Henry Cavill's definitely.
I will give Henry Cavill the benefit of the doubt. I will give Sam Rockwell the benefit of the doubt. I think John
Bryce
Cena.
Howard.
I was going John Cena. Man, do you think just because she's a woman, she doesn't get to be paid that much? Is that what you're saying, Kevin?
No, I just said she probably gets as much. She's a she's a lead in this. I bet she gets a decent amount.
Yeah, but I don't think Cena does or
Cranston or
when
Catherine you go to
O'Hara.
France and you see Samuel Jackson, I'm sure that's on location. You see that beautiful vineyards and the landscape. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of on location. You've got the actors, and again, it's streaming. So if they're not going
to
see,
there's no reason that they had to put Samuel Jackson in France. You get an exterior of that house, and then you just put him on a set.
No, but it is, they did, though.
But it is the guys. I'm sure Matthew Vaughn's like, man, we got that Apple money, bitch. Like, we can do whatever
but
we want.
But I think that's also like, that's a vacation for Samuel Jackson,
that's true.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Sometimes actors take those deals.
Yeah, Sam Jackson's like, I'm going to walk from that chair to the front of that door, and that's it.
I'm not saying you need to, but it's like, so I do think that the actors are getting paid a ton up front, and then you do have the locations. You have the special effects for better or for worse, and a lot of stuff. Now, should it have been $200 million? I'm not saying it should have. Budgets have gotten ridiculous. Aquaman being $250 million, and it made less than $400 million worldwide. Like, that's insane when the first one made $1.1
billion. Yeah.
Budgets are crazy. But I just mean when it comes to streaming movies, remember, what are those movies? Name the title. The Rock and Ryan Reynolds and you know Netflix action movies. Like, they all have $200 million, and we can't remember what they were or the plot
of
them.
The Adam Project?
They
that's
just
the first one that came to mind.
Well, that one's good. But,
Extraction.
Extraction
was really good.
Was good. Yeah. I never saw the second one.
What's The Rock and Ryan
Red
Reynolds?
Five?
Red something.
Not Red 5. Red.
Dead.
Redemption. But that's what I mean. But that's a $200-something million movie that has now been erased from our collective
consciousness. And I actually liked that movie.
Yeah, that was
like,
Gal Gadot.
I'll never watch it again, but it was fine as I was watching, I'm like, this is good.
But $200 million for just this throwaway, it's here and gone. And then didn't Ryan Gosling do an action
movie?
He
did one
on
with Chris Evans.
Yeah, that.
The Gray Man.
So streaming movies have insane budgets. They just do. And I think now because of the writer's strike and because
the
of
actor's strike.
The actor's strike, I think that you're gonna see, you know, they've gotta pay these people up front.
They're
you know,
just gonna jack up the subscription prices.
Well, they already are. So anyway, I think that accounts a lot for the budget, not the CG. It definitely went into other things. But anyway, but that's my whole thing about this movie. I separated it from things like that because I was like, oh, it's the book and it's crazy, and you could see her and her eyes keep imagining things. She was using her imagination to, well, I'm going to put this in the book. So we know from when we get into the plot that she's writing these books, but they're actually twist number one of 50 is that she was a secret agent. She was Agent Argyle. And so in her subconscious, she created the character. So she thinks of Argyle. And all her books are based on her real life missions.
Yes.
And so we're watching book five. And at the end
book,
of the movie.
Yeah, book five is playing out, is yeah. the movie, basically.
And at the end, when we're done, you know, it gets to like the final scene before the post.
No, book six.
No, five. She has four and she's writing five.
I thought they said that I wasn't five coming out and that she's like six is right behind it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
No, she has four because I remember in her when she goes to her house, she has four different colored books all lined up.
I got you.
And so she was working on the fifth one. So when we see it, it cuts back to her. It's book ended very literally. The movie's book ended with her doing her reading of the fourth book. And at the end of this movie, she's doing the reading of the fifth book.
Right.
And it's what we just saw. But we saw, I think, a lot of her imagination of what was going to be in the book while they were on the real, more grounded mission, which is still spies and guns and chases, but not all the colors
double
and
crosses.
The crazy. Well, just not the visual flair of it. The ice skating thing was in the book. There's no way.
The crazy,
in my
like,
mind.
Colorful gas bomb.
Because it's so silly. When you watch it happening, it's like unrealistically silly.
Right.
Like, it's not just silly. You know, I took it like that's a book. You're reading a book about spies because the part we know was a book was the opening of the movie, and it was silly, but it's in a book.
Was that cat ever real?
Yeah. Yeah.
When?
Believe it or not, I mean, I feel like some of the scenes were like they're holding them, you know, it's a real cat. Because I actually, when I was doing my research for the review, turns out that cat belongs to Matthew Vaughn and his wife, the German supermodel, Claudia Schiffer.
Oh,
Claudia
okay.
Schiffer brains.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what, there's a certain radio host that used to call her that.
That cat is named Chip.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it looked like when they were holding the cat.
Ah, there was
it
one moment
real,
where like the one of them was petting the cat. I was like, that thing ain't real.
There's a lot of CG. You could the way it moves, you can tell. But it's gotten really good, right? Animals in movies, they've gotten it to a point to where they can do it and it doesn't jump out as obvious. But you're right. There's certain parts where you hold on to it and it's moving slow.
What are you doing? Like, that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, they weren't planning on using the cat, but they brought the cat on set and like the more or less like interacted, like walked around set. They're like, maybe we can use this.
Well, good thing they do.
Wasn't Billy Joel married to Claudia Schiffer?
No, he
was
married to
Christy
Brinkley.
Christy Brinkley, that's who that was.
Well, it's a good thing they did bring the cat on set because now everyone thinks the movie's written by Taylor Swift.
What?
Yeah. Everybody, because of the cat, for some reason, Swifties got it in their head because they did this PR thing for the movie where, like, I think on IMDb they listed the Bryce Dallas Howard character as the author of the screenplay.
Well, no, they released
a book. Yeah.
They released book one.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
It's a real book.
The next movie is supposed to be based on the book, apparently.
Yeah.
So they dropped it as written by Conway.
But people were like, this person doesn't exist. And so then the theory became that Taylor Swift had written.
How did it get to Taylor Swift?
She has the same cat, and in her documentary, she's carrying the cat in a bag that looks just like it.
Holy
with the bubble window.
Guacamole.
So now the Swifties, you know, and of course the studio's not going to stop them.
No,
great.
Hell
this
no.
Great. So anyway, that was
she's going to win the Super Bowl. What are you talking about?
Right.
Yeah. She's going to get a ring and everything. Yeah. Might get two.
Might get two. Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting. So I watched a video review of someone reviewing the first book, and they said it wasn't very good. It's got like a 3.5 out of 10 on Goodreads, you know.
Whatever.
But they released this whole book, and it is all about the origin story of Argyle. And so what they teased at the end is that
Well, story. You know where he's going to be a Kingsman.
Well, that's the story. I mean, they put it on there.
I did read that apparently Matthew Vaughn plans on making like three of these Argyle movies, and it's going to cross over eventually with Kingsman. So like,
he
final...
went to the Kingsman bar.
I mean,
bar.
Did, right? Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying like the last movie is going to like culminate with like the Kingsman working with Argyle.
Oh, I see. Man, those movies aren't that first one's good.
The first one's a blast.
The second one's terrible.
The second one was
I never
such
saw
a
the third one.
Yeah.
That was a prequel.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed The Kingsman, the third one, because I felt like it was a little bit closer in spirit to the first. And the second one basically took everything that was good about the first one. It just kind of blew it into such proportions that it was just so absurdly bad.
Yeah. This one where he goes down on the gal.
Yeah.
And like there's a whole like.
I think he finger bangs her.
That's true. Yeah.
And then Pedro Pascal is there with doing a Texan accent. Is he the
and
one that does
Channing Tatum is in it as well?
For like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And they kill Sophie Cookson within the first 5 minutes.
But the confusing thing, if this is going to cross over with Kingsman, but Samuel L. Jackson is playing a different character.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that just is one of those actor things where it's like, oh, we used him up, but he's a good actor.
Him and Sofia Boutella is in both.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's got the the thing
for her legs, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
they're Matthew Vaughn people. You know?
Yeah. I was a little surprised we didn't see Taron Egerton in it too.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, if they're gonna cross over, he's the only guy left, right? Because everyone else is dead.
Because I could have swore we saw the house he was in The Kingsman.
Oh, really?
It looked very familiar. Yeah. As soon as it popped up, and I haven't seen The Kingsman, the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
The Secret Service.
The comic book was called The Secret Service.
Yeah, I haven't seen that since it came out. But as soon as that house popped up, I was like, I thought we saw that house in The Kingsman.
Hmm.
That's probably Matthew Vaughn going, I like these locations.
Yeah. Right. Or it's his house, and he can pay himself.
That's also true. Yeah.
But he's like, house rental, $100 million.
That's hilarious.
Got it.
Yes.
So let's breeze
through
this plot.
So like, Bryce Dallas Howard plays a writer.
Ellie Conway.
And she has written these four novels about Agent Argyle, played by Henry Cavill. And what happens is she's off. Like, the entire time she's like, she's dedicated to her job. So she doesn't have time for like a relationship, or she doesn't go out. She just works all the
time. But subconsciously, there's clearly something with dating, right? Like, you can tell when you're watching the movie, you're like, well, why doesn't she want to date these guys? It's not just she's a home buddy. And, you know, it's because she subconsciously has a partner.
Yeah.
You know, right. There's something in her that we don't know that till later. But it's like they make enough of a point of it where you're like, why isn't she dating?
Yes. So she writes the end of this book, of book five, and she sends it to her mom, played by Catherine O'Hara.
Her mom.
Right. Well, we got that for you. The mom's like, I don't know, the ending is kind of trash. Like, why don't you come to Chicago? Like, I'll come to you. We'll figure this out.
Stay in the McAllister house.
Yeah. Now we know how they got all that money.
Now we know.
See? So Ellie decides, she hops on an Amtrak, which I cannot imagine could not have cost much to get Amtrak. To be like,
I've been on that before to Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, same.
As soon as I saw that, I'm just like, well, that's good.
It's a fun ride. It's easy peasy. Yeah. While she's on the train, she is approached by a guy that looks like a hobo. And it turns out it's Sam Rockwell, and he like
that was funny when she turns down the like model looking guy.
Yeah,
he's like, "Is this seat taken?" She's like, "Yeah, actually it is." And he goes, "Okay, that's too bad." And he's like dreamy and walks away.
Right,
and then Sam Rockwell plops down and he looks like a homeless guy.
He's got
and
a big like, beard, long hair,
and she goes, "Well, actually, that seat's taken." Okay, if he comes back, I'll get up. That was great. That interaction was just great. I love Sam Rockwell. I mean, he's the
MVP of the movie.
He's great.
Like,
yeah,
he's fantastic.
He was almost your Iron Man.
It was very close.
Yeah,
and we got him in Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
What I like about this is that he doesn't like try to sugarcoat things. He's like, no, these books are great. Like, but also she, you know, he kind of, I guess he asks what she does or something. And she's like, well, what do you do? He's like, espionage. Yeah. And she's just like, what? And he basically says, look, you have written something that you're freaking people out and they want to take you out. There's going to be a moment where, I'm going to snap this guy's wrist. His gun's going to fall in your lap and you're going to give me the gun and we're going to.
He true lies it.
Very much true lies it.
You're going to hug me, a bear
this
hug.
This is Romancing the Stone.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's what I thought of as soon as I, you know. And then, of course, we get. And I will give Matthew Vaughn credit, is I do think he can direct the hell out of an action sequence.
Kind
of
day and night, too.
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't think that's the Tom Cruise one. Mm-hmm. I never saw
that. Or Night and Day, but yeah.
I'm sorry. That's a great.
That's a fun movie.
It's so really fun.
Yeah.
Talk about fun action movies.
And that was like right coming off the heels of the couch
that
jumping.
That was his comeback kind of thing.
And I'm not a Tom Cruise guy, but that movie was a lot of fun.
I saw it in the theater and just had, I loved it.
Yeah. Interesting.
You got to see it. It's
fun. There's a giant fight sequence where Sam Rockwell is just taking people out left and right.
But meanwhile, it's flashing to her seeing Argyle.
Correct.
You know, she's imagining Agent Argyle doing this stuff.
So it's Henry Cavill doing all this.
And what I like is that when it's Argyle, he's smooth, he's suave, he's banging people the head together, and the women are like on his shoulders. And then it cuts to Sam Rockwell and they're attacking
him. Yeah, and he's got like two of them in a headlock, and he's like, this is terrible.
But I think that shows you that like when everything is going so perfectly and amazingly, it's the book. She's imagining scenes from the book. That's her writing book five in real time.
There's a moment in this where Henry Cavill is like, it's a close up on his face. And then I thought, just the way his mouth moved, I was like,
that motherfucker have a mustache?
I know. But when they zoom in real close on his face, and then they transition to her face.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I cannot believe they did it again.
That haircut, man.
I don't know who thought that haircut was a good idea.
I think they know. I mean, it's supposed to be, again, like a book, a comic-y type, whatever. But I just, like, every time I see him, that haircut, it's so
it's
bad.
Real bad.
It's like Guile from Street Fighter.
I felt like that was... a reference to the mustache thing because it's so nerd driven and they know this because there's another thing later that I laughed out loud at after she realizes she's a spy and they try to sex her up, which was weird because she was so much better looking before they tried to make her sexy. But towards the end, when she's running through what we will find out is an oil tanker, she's dressed up in this evening gown. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I can't think of that.
She stops and she takes off her high heels.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, that's and a Jurassic start, World reference.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, and I just, yeah.
So you think there's little things together. Oh, yeah. How can you not associate her?
I totally forgot.
Meme of the whole Jurassic World was she's running around in
full
heels.
Speed.
And then in the third movie, maybe the best part of a horrible movie, is that she finally takes them off, and it's like, yes, take them off and run.
That's
and then
funny.
She takes them, yeah, totally. I think we should say for a second, I mean, I know we're all men, so maybe it's not we're not like the perfect people to address this.
You mean
but
she's drop dead gorgeous?
Well,
before they gussy her all up?
Right. No, she's perfect. What I'm saying is I think the evening gown thing is kind of empowering because Bryce Dallas Howard looks like a normal person.
That's fair.
She's not a supermodel looking, you know, trying to fit into this Hollywood stereotype. I do think she's one of the most gorgeous women in the world. And
she's built like a woman.
Right. And so I think putting her in a sexy outfit, just like they would any other Hollywood star in a sexy outfit, is empowering. Because
I think making her blonde was a mistake.
Yes.
She does not look good as a blonde.
Yeah, I don't really know why, unless that was like a book thing.
I thought it was supposed to be a wig. Is it not a wig?
That's what I figured. She was in kind of like a disguise.
Because her hair
thing.
Goes right back to being long and red by the time we get to the end of the movie.
Yeah, but there's a time jump because she had to go write a book.
I guess that's
true. Then get it published and released. And then, you know what I mean?
I'm not sure. I don't.
When they flash back to show her as Rachel Guile or whatever, don't they show her as a blonde?
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe.
Her hair was pulled back super tight, so I don't remember.
Yeah, but I believe like she had light hair, like blonde hair.
So she probably had to go back. That was probably
I saw in Avengers is when Black Widow had blonde tips because she let her hair grow out. That's all I'm saying. They could have done something.
Yeah.
But instead of like going from like a pixie cut all the way down to like, oh, by the way, her hair grows at abnormal speed.
But I think Bryce Dallas Howard being cast in this action movie as the lead actor is something that people notice. And I think it's great that she's not hiding anything or feeling like, oh, we can't use her because she doesn't look like a Hollywood model type, you know?
No,
I think it's a huge positive for the film.
Yeah, no, I've always thought she was insanely attractive.
Yeah.
But and then in this one, when she's throwing punches, I was like, fine, how do you do?
She looks great. But I do think that's something that, you know, people notice. And that's great to see because we just see the same thing in movies over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, the skinny, twig, small Hollywood idea of beauty.
I definitely think they're getting away from that.
Yeah, also true.
Because, like, I mean, you just saw in Mean Girls.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Yeah, that's like, a great example.
So, I mean, I definitely think you're seeing more.
What's that? I didn't watch it. What part is
the gal that plays Regina George?
Yeah, she's. I would not call her plus size in any way.
No. But the popular girl isn't.
But she's not a size one,
right? Yeah.
But
for Hollywood, she's plus size. But for the rest of the world, she's a normal human being who has eaten a meal. But I will say, my wife loved this movie, and I think that it was very smart how they marketed this movie, because I know it's like it's a secret Kingsman crossover.
Yeah.
If they had imaged this as a Kingsman movie, she would have never gone to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She watched the first one, didn't like it, and she's like, that's
second
too,
one is
she's like, that's too much for boys, not my
that's
thing.
Fair.
And,
that's fair.
And so if this had been positioned as a Kingsman movie, because I even said when we were watching, I was like, well, this is from the guy that does Kingsman. And she's like, she's like, well, this looks fun. And I was like, well, it looks like, I mean, it's PG-13 versus R. And I'm like, I think they're trying.
Was Kingsman R?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That scene in the church?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. And but I was just like, if this had been that, if she would have never gone to see it.
That's what holds this movie back.
What?
That the PG-13 rating
definitely
because
does
because Matthew Vaughn knows how to do some kick-ass action.
He does,
and being held back by that PG-13 rating, this movie would be, I mean, we've seen it in Kingsman, in Kick-Ass, we would have had this crazy, bloody, gory, insane fight sequences, and he can't, his hands are tied. He can't make the kills as cool, you know, so yeah, I think you get to stylized, which then I think lends itself to the book thing. But I just think that we would get some really cool action sequences, but there's nothing he could do.
Nah, yeah.
I mean, which is a shame because it's a streaming movie.
Here's the thing. It's like, you can do it, but you don't get Matthew Vaughn then.
Right.
Right? Like, Matthew Vaughn does have a hard R.
He's a rated R action guy. That's exactly
it. Right? And when you handcuff someone like that, there's a way to do it, right? I mean, a lot of action, you know, action
X-Men
comedies.
First Class. That's PG-13, and he did well with that.
Yeah, a lot of action comedies now are PG. You know, I think of Rush Hour or, you know, things like that where it's PG-13, and they work.
Yeah.
This one, for the level of violence that they wanted to, you know, there's a whole scene where she's sliding on her knees through tar, like firing rounds, and there's not a single, you know, it's like...
There's, like, almost no blood.
There's zero. Yeah, yeah. I feel like the only blood you see is through Sam Rockwell's shirt.
Yeah, and when he gets shot point blank in the chest.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it misses everything.
Yeah.
Just, whatever. Sam Rockwell's like, look, you've tapped into something. We don't know what's going on. These people are going to kill you. I am here to help you. And she's like, this is insane. You know, it's very much, if you've ever seen Romancing the Stone, this is the exact same plot.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic movie if you've never seen it. So good. So they're on this adventure together, and Sam Rockwell is constantly trying to like prove himself. I think there's a really funny scene where I'm sure he was like, get this beard and hair off of me. Yeah. So he comes out of the bathroom and he's shaved, you know, he looks like Sam Rockwell, and they're trying to find this silver bullet. And inside this bullet basically it's a flash drive that has all of this.
It's a literal and figurative silver bullet
on the quote unquote directive, which is like this super secret, super spy
division. I think it's called the division.
I think the division is what it's. Oh, maybe the directive is in the book.
The directorate,
maybe.
I think it's the division because I remember I'm a big fan of the Tom Clancy's division. The division. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, division reference.
So basically, this
it
silver
is the division
in the book or in the movie.
I think in real life, it's the division.
Good enough.
Yeah.
So on this flash drive is all of this information, and
well, so basically they were CIA, and the CIA. The bad guys that were like excommunicated started the division, and so they have no proof. Samuel L. Jackson was like the head of the CIA,
yeah,
and R. Kyle and
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, what's his name?
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell.
Yep. In the movie, he's called Aiden, I think.
Oh, Aiden. Okay. Aiden, yeah. They were all part of the CIA, and then the division took over, and you know, Sam Rockwell wasn't cool with it. Sam Jackson wasn't cool with it. We're not sure if R. Kyle. You know, is
right. We assume
is cool with it. You would think so, but then it's a little twist-a-rooney. You know, yeah, it's like, right. Is she in on it? Is she not? You know, and we eventually find out. But that's what the division is. It's like a splinter of the CIA. And Sam Jackson is trying to prove that there's division exists and they're doing bad stuff. And all this data is on this flash drive that like the tech nerd guy was going to sell to.
R. Kyle.
Was it Rachel. Her? I couldn't tell if he was selling it to her. Or was he talking
to
her?
Because that was so in the book. In the fifth book, Henry Cavill shows up for the drop, and this guy no-shows. So what they're saying, what Sam Rockwell tells Bryce Dallas Howard is like, look, just make up whatever you think is going to happen. Like, you have figured this out. You've got this sixth sense. So she just starts working through the whole thing. What we find out is that Ellie Conway is not real. That this entire time, Ellie Conway is actually a super spy. And she had an accident, and the directive led by Bryan Cranston and Catherine O'Hara take the opportunity to basically psyop her into believing she's this writer.
And this kind of Manchurian Candidate? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they call it...
With the activation and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. What was that awful Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart movie written by...
Oh, American Ultra?
Oh, Max Landis. Yeah.
Yes.
American Ultra.
The epitome of... Waking up on Adventureland,
and that was fun. That's Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's a very different movie.
I know. When you mentioned those two, I'm like,
man, Max Landis
Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds
playing a douchebag.
Too, yeah.
Yeah,
like a major, like, and not like a I'm cute, funny douchebag.
Yeah,
a douchebag. Yeah. Max Landis is the epitome of a guy that woke up on third and thought he hit a triple.
And it's so sad because that video he made on Superman was so good.
And Chronicle was good.
Yeah.
But
that was back around the Chronicle time when we're like, wow, this guy is really good.
And then he sucked. And then he got Me Too'd, so good on him. Get out. Your dad killed people.
Well, that was an accident.
It was an accident. I know. Ruined his career, though.
I mean, it was,
Yeah. Is he directing Beverly Hills Cop 4? There's no way.
I think so.
I think he is. Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Didn't Eddie Murphy say he would never work with him again?
After Vampire in Brooklyn, I believe he said that.
Okay.
Well, time and money heals all wounds.
This will be interesting. I wonder if sorry, because this movie sucks. I did not like this movie at all. But it'll be interesting if Beverly Hills Cop takes off again.
Well, it's going straight to streaming, isn't it? Isn't it a Netflix movie?
What?
It's not a Paramount movie?
I thought it was a Netflix movie. That makes sense, though, because Paramount owns the rights.
Right. I would think that'd be a Paramount Plus movie.
That's kind of shocking that they wouldn't put that in theaters.
Maybe they are going to put it in theaters,
big,
though.
Yeah.
Release.
I feel like more and more they are starting to do the drop-in theaters. If it makes a ton of money, great. If it doesn't, it goes to streaming.
Yeah.
You know?
But I wonder if that revitalizes his career. I wonder if we get some more John Landis stuff.
Oh,
yeah. Beverly Hills Cop 4, Axel F, Netflix.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like whoever has the most
money. Which is weird. You make a great point that, I mean, Eddie Murphy back then, he had a Paramount had him locked up. All those Eddie Murphy movies were Paramount.
Yeah. Metro.
Because I remember back in the day when I was a kid, we had to pick between Showtime or HBO. My mom would only let us get one movie channel. And I always pick Showtime because I knew all the Eddie Murphy movies would be on Showtime.
Oh, slick. Well done.
I think we're living in such...
And you get boobies.
Well, you would have got boobies on HBO.
Oh, that's true.
But we live in this strange time where streaming and rights, the streaming companies don't always carry the studios that are owned by the same parent company.
Right.
Like,
no, you're
HBO
right.
HBO is doing this thing where it's like they're starting to license out.
You're seeing a lot of HBO show pop up on Netflix right now. I mean, Six Feet Under is on there. Insecure is on there.
Don't tell the Snyder Bros that.
Yeah.
Golly. Wow.
But it also seems to be, for the most part, older HBO content. Like the Batman cartoon they let go.
Amazon. That's going to Amazon.
Oh, really?
A Bruce Timm produced and directed Batman cartoon is going to Amazon.
I think they're
HBO.
Starting to figure out as they're trying to figure out how this business model can work. I think they're starting to figure out if we have a movie or a show on our platform, it's going to get views for X amount of time, and then after that, its value to us is minimal, so we'll license it to another, and like these things will just bump around. It'll be on, my guess is you'll start to see a hierarchy, right?
I did that with Harry Potter, I think, because that was on Netflix for a while.
It was on Netflix
for a while. And then they're like, oh, it's coming to HBO Max, which you thought was really weird. It's like, oh, but it wasn't just on HBO Max. And then I think it now is somewhere else or was going to like,
so they did all those Marvel
shows? They're moving
shows?
Them around, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when Disney picked up all those Netflix Marvel shows and now they're on Disney Plus.
That's how they make money. And it's just funny. I see all these YouTube videos now saying streaming services are becoming cable. And it's like, who's been saying that for years?
Right. Exactly.
Literally, for years.
We saw that coming from a mile away.
Yeah. I always say that. I'm like, congratulations, you invented cable. It's like we all knew that this couldn't sustain, that it would become the cable model.
Right.
Prices going up and not as much.
But then you've also got companies consolidating and it's Warner Brothers Discovery where you've got all those stupid channels that I don't watch. You know, like, I don't know, watch TLC.
What they'll do, though, is they'll take one of those shows and they'll elevate it into HBO, into the Max platform. Yeah. It's because, like, I've gotten sucked into some of those shows that I would never go into Discovery to watch, but then they, like, put it up on the main page of HBO, like that Natalia Grace documentary about that's kind of like the girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that thing was riveting. I mean, we blew through that thing in like,
oh, really?
In like 2 days. It was crazy.
That's the one about
it's kind of eerily
based on
The Orphan.
The Orphan.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The family was like, she's not seven. She's 24.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay.
Like, you need to watch this documentary. Yeah. It is crazy.
I'm going to look that up.
It is available on Max. I hate saying Max.
Max, the place to go for HBO.
The Water Tower.
Yeah. Right, yeah, for something, yeah.
Something else.
But I think that started as like a Discovery Plus type of thing. Or it was on one of their...
And, oh, they you'd it, right? Is it you?
You.
That, wasn't that show You? Or do I always
it was You.
Yeah, yes. it was on Lifetime, and nobody gave a and then they put it on Netflix, and it was a giant hit.
It blew up.
Isn't that interesting how that can happen?
Yeah.
So this becomes a big MacGuffin hunt. They're all trying to get to the silver bullet, and along the way, we meet our different characters. Her and Sam Rockwell, they go to Paris, and then they meet with Samuel L. Jackson, and he's like one of the heads of the
CIA. This is where they drop the bomb that Ellie is actually Rachel.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and that Sam Rockwell has been following her for 5 years, and they didn't want to like rush her back in because whatever information she had in her head, if they forced the memories back on her, she could have forgotten everything.
Yeah. So they basically tried to let her organically tap into them. And so through writing the book, all these details, and it was eerily accurate because it's what actually happened.
So
they decided, well, let's just keep letting her write these books. And eventually the division wants to get the secrets of wherever this thing is. I guess they're trying to find the silver bullet too.
So the silver bullet is held by the gal with the springy legs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sophia Boutella.
Thank you.
Because that disc holds the identities of all the people who turned rogue. So if she publishes it, if that word gets out, they are basically screwed.
What's it called? Mission Impossible. It's the knock list. It's the knock list.
Yes.
So it is. Right from the first Mission Impossible, the knock list.
They're burned. But I will say, Layer Cake does have some great twists. Like, that movie is fantastic.
Like L4YER.
It's layer.
Isn't it spelled weird on the poster though?
That's how Daniel Craig got James Bond. Like that was kind of, it wasn't his audition tape, but they're like, hey, check this guy out.
Didn't you guys kind of think like this is Cavill being James Bond?
Like, did you also see that like somebody was, oh man, who directed that first one? Was it Martin Campbell? Mm-hmm. He said that he liked Henry Cavill's Bond more than Daniel Craig.
He was too young or something, they thought at the time.
Probably.
I think
I read that it was.
He had to be in his like early 20s.
Like they didn't want to do a Bond early years thing. Yeah. Although they were, I think one thing I read said that they're open to it. They just weren't willing to do it yet.
So I couldn't help but to think him being secret agent. I'm like, oh, it's him getting to kind of be
getting a little Bond. Yeah. I think he could still do it. I think he's still, he's probably in his, I think he's got to be in his 30s. He can't be in his 40s,
I think he could. I wonder if it depends if he wants to be locked down into doing that. I mean, you know, because Daniel Craig was pumping him out pretty regularly.
Is he really?
Yeah,
on the nose. Oh, dang.
It's just Henry Cavill's got a lot of...
He's the same age as I am. That's crazy.
Well, you look just like Henry Cavill.
Yeah, so you'd be a stunt double.
I thought Henry Cavill walked in today when I was like, Argyle?
Turned sideways.
I blinked.
I was
like, Argyle? Joe?
Chris Hemsworth is also 40.
God.
And Chris Evans is 42.
I've got 3 years.
Get it together, brother. Tighten it up. So they are Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas Howard. They're basically on, like you said, they're on a MacGuffin hunt.
They got to go to the keeper.
Abu Dhabi. I don't know where that, like, it definitely looks like it's supposed to be somewhere in Cairo or, you know, something like that. And they go in and they have this dance.
Is it like Emirates, United Arab Emirates?
UAE.
I have no idea. Is that where they were?
I don't know.
I feel like they kept that intentionally vague so they don't piss someone off.
Yeah, that's
fair.
I thought
it was kind of like
totally
Top Gun Maverick did with, they didn't
they
show.
Made up
non-discrete. Even though you know.
Yeah.
Can you call them something else besides Russians? No.
I don't know if that place was real, but if they did film, like that's like the gates open and then a drone goes up and you see all this like open air, like this palace and all.
It was awesome.
It was a really cool looking place.
But I do like this, got a laugh out of me, where the two of them are dancing and this is where Sam Rockwell reveals, look, the hardest job I've ever had to do is pretend I'm not in love with you. We've been together for X amount of time. And
if you didn't see that coming,
of course you saw it coming.
A mile away. Yeah.
What would have been funnier is if they would have somehow been able to talk Henry Cavill and John Cena in the kissing.
I said the same thing.
The end of the movie, her and him kiss, and they cut to the same people being John Cena and Henry Cavill.
Agreed.
And I thought they were going to do it. Same. 100%.
We say this all the time.
And it just never happened. And then I thought, I guess maybe they'd. I just wonder if that was an idea.
To me,
that would have made it a $250 million.
I don't know. Like, I feel like both of those guys.
Like good humored enough to,
Cena especially. Like I just saw the trailer for that new comedy that he's in. Yeah. That looks ridiculous in the best possible way.
Yeah. So they go to Sophia Boutella and she's the keeper and she has to pretend. I mean, because she still is Ellie. Like her Rachel has not come back fully. She knows about her, but so she has to pretend to be the spy. So there's this dance floor sequence that kind of
the thing that made got a laugh out of me is when the guy's like, hey, no, like no physical affection. And I was like, oh, that's pretty funny.
Well, it's kind of funny that well, never mind, that's later. But I like how they switched the thing where in the book Argyle takes Dua Lipa and does the Whirly Bird.
Yeah.
And then later, I guess that's based on because Sam Rockwell and her used to do that.
Yeah.
But Sam Rockwell does it to her.
Well, and then no, she does it to him.
She does it to him, which is a funny role reversal type thing because you, of course, presume that it's the man. Know, so
but it's not.
But so she goes up to the keeper and she does what? How does she get activated?
She basically, the Dua Lipa says something. And it clicks in her brain.
Ellie, she's basically like, only one of you is going to walk out. Are you really Ellie or are you Rachel?
And then something clicks. And then she just...
What was it, though? There was something.
I can't remember.
But somehow...
She flips into Rachel.
Yeah.
And delivers some pretty aggressive lines.
Yeah.
And she gets the silver bullet and she's walking out of there. And
well, Dua Lipa says, do you want to... Or no, I'm sorry. Sophia Boutella says... Do you want to use my computer? It's safe and secure. Like, sure,
Yeah, okay.
And then so she.
Well, I guess that's true. Then she sees Bryan Cranston's picture. She sees Catherine O'Hara's picture, and then she sees a picture that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, this is one of two people, and I don't care at this point who it is.
Is Sam Rockwell going to be bad? I was thinking they were going that way.
What was the one where they switched roles? The Way Back.
The Way Back.
Yeah, oh, with Steve Carell and Sam Rockwell.
Oh, that movie was fantastic. Love that movie. Love it.
So here's the most irritating thing in the movie for me.
Yes.
The hands down is
that was the kiss thing. You didn't get to see John Cena. Yeah. Second most irritating thing.
Well, this is the most irritating thing that happened. Oh, not okay. The most okay. irritating thing that didn't happen.
Okay.
So their song.
Yeah.
Is Now and Then by the Beatles.
Okay.
And this is their song. This song has only existed for like 6 weeks.
What?
Oh, is this a new song?
Yeah, it's the new song by the Beatles, the one that they used A&I to make the audio sound better on a John Lennon song he recorded into a cassette tape.
Huh. I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah. So this was like a backdoor promotion for that new song.
Yeah.
Does Apple own own the catalog for the Beatles?
They did at one point. Didn't Apple own the Beatles?
No, Apple got the shoot out of them by the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
Because when they created Apple computers, the Beatles were like...
Oh, Apple Records.
The Beatles were like, we own Apple as a brand because of Apple Records. And so this is in the early 80s. And so they sue the living shit out of Apple. And they come to an agreement and they cut a check to Apple Records and the Beatles. And then it's part of the agreement. They're like, you can continue to use the name Apple for computers just as long as you never enter the music space.
Oh.
And at the time, Apple was like, yeah, why would we have a need to do that?
Nobody's going to listen to digital music.
Yeah. And then later when they did, they got sued again.
By the Beatles.
By the Beatles. Because they had breached this contract and then had to write another check. So... So this is the song that, I mean, this was a major news story that this is the new song from the Beatles.
This was like a demo that Lennon recorded.
Right. So like all those, like when they did the new songs for Anthology, like Free as a Bird, like they had done Free as a Bird and Real Love. Was there a third? But so they had worked on this song, and this is why this will be the last Beatles song.
This one that's in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had worked on this song because they had a cassette recording of Lennon, who had written the song Now and Then. And they were like, oh, we'll have Ringo put down drums and we'll. But they couldn't get, because it was on a cassette tape, they couldn't get the sound good enough to put out. Now with AI and new technology, they could. But they had tried to record this for the Anthology sessions.
Okay.
Well, because of that, they had a George Harrison guitar track.
Oh.
Right? And so because they had attempted it and couldn't get the audio quality good enough on Lennon's vocals. And now that they could get the audio quality good enough on Lennon's
vocals.
Now
they've got a recording.
And they're like, we've got a Harrison guitar track and Ringo and Paul are still alive. So they went in and they did the things. And then so it's all four of them on a track. Wow. And this is the last time they're going to be able to do that.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
And I don't, and like just the idea that you can be like, well, I've got this little snippet of this thing here. I've got this thing here and we'll just bloop.
Well, they've been doing for years. Yeah, I mean, because I mean, you record the tracks that's differently,
true.
And you know,
but I mean, like, just the idea that you've got this one thing from 20 years ago, you've got this other thing from
like 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. sure. But it reminds me of, have you seen this Carlin thing? Have you seen this?
Yeah,
I read about it, but I haven't seen it.
Eerie.
It sounds just like a real stand-up special.
Just like him.
Yeah.
And it's the Kate. Everything is there, but it's like, man.
Like it's isn't his family like suing for it?
Yeah, I think his daughter.
They are.
Sued.
Yeah, his daughter controls the estate.
Yeah, and it is like she's like, you know, of course it's like my dad worked his entire life for this, and this dude was like, hey computer, this is what.
Yeah, and now the podcast is Will Sasso and someone else. It's a celebrities
it's a very,
doing
it's
the
a
podcast.
Very good podcast,
and I think
they just listened to it. They didn't make it, did they? I think they just listened to it.
No, that's them. They created
did they really?
That artificial thing.
Oh.
They're in trouble. They're suing Will Sasso and the other guy.
I thought they had just listened to it. Oh.
No, it's their thing, and they're not happy about it.
No, I don't blame them. That's the part that scares me.
But, I don't think that they – I definitely don't think they did it to make money or anything. I think they were doing it as more of like an experiment.
Can we do this?
You know? Yeah, and it's a shame because, you know, I mean, they're already – there. You know, they are celebrities of some sort. They have a podcast. I don't think they were trying to let's go sell this George Carlin thing. Like, it was more of an experiment, and it got so much attention that now it's like, we got to shut this down.
Right.
Well, I don't know that they can really win a lawsuit if they're not monetizing it. Like, I don't know.
But
that,
if you monetize the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to. Yeah, I don't know what the lawsuit's going to look like. But
anyway, it irritated me because he's saying this is their song, and there's no way it could be their song because it didn't exist. And so, but because of that, right, I was like, oh, this is a clue. Like, this guy isn't on the up and up because he's telling her something that is factually impossible to have occurred.
Interesting.
And it was really just product placement for a new song.
Yes. And it was really basically just somebody, they had the opportunity to use a Beatles song, and nobody's going to say no to using a Beatles song, even if it's a really mediocre one.
That's true. Yeah. Because it's a Beatles song that, you know.
That's a bummer, but that stuff bothers me in biopics. That stuff doesn't bother me in secret agent superhero action movies.
Normally I would agree, except in this case, like, they're using what ends up being a red herring. It's like, maybe this is a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's been lying to her. Well, when he says something that for a lot of people is a glaring inaccuracy.
Yeah, I can see that.
You're going to be like this guy's lying to her.
Earlier in the movie, he's in the bathroom. He's talking to someone on the phone. He's like, Ellie Conway needs a bullet in her head.
Yeah.
And we hear that, and you're just like, holy, but he's talking about the persona of Ellie,
which I like that stuff. Seeing a spy twisting, you know, a movie with all these twists and turns. I think that everything this movie wrote
to him, like he does want Ellie Conway dead,
totally,
because he wants Rachel.
I love that the stuff that happens in the movie. Like, I think it's well written enough to where it all checks out. In this, other than that one thing that I think most people probably will not catch, but the twists and turns actually do work out. It's not like you're like, well, wait a minute, but this, like, I think it all checks out.
Well, I think the reveal, you know, when Ellie is in France and she calls her mom and they show up, and then we find out that the dad, you know, you think initially the dad is Bryan Cranston, who was like the leader of this directive, and you're like, oh my god, but it's all
I thought it was gonna be that he was really her dad, but also the
that's what I
directive.
Did too they definitely set
but
that
so
up
so we
way.
Should just
she's a nepo baby in real life and in the movie,
so we should briefly mention though that she finds out in that one meeting that Catherine O'Hara and Bryan Cranston are
not
her
parents.
They really are bad guys, secret agent, whatever. And she, you know, Catherine O'Hara gets shot, but she has a bulletproof vest on. And
everybody comes back, and basically, what they do is while Ellie was in the hospital, knowing that she was this super secret agent, these two, Catherine O'Hara, Bryan Cranston, come in and do psyops on her and make her
Manchurian candidate,
and they set it up to where they can activate her like the Winter Soldier if they want to, and they do here. They activate her. She goes bad, and she starts beating up Sam Rockwell, and she's, you know, on the side of the team. But then we kind of also find out that she was a double agent the whole time. And I mean, basically, they win. That's really what it comes down to.
I thought the ice skating scene was clever.
I thought it was well done.
That's what I talk about.
I like that
original stuff.
Where she goes, was the ice skating part real? And he was like, oh yeah, you were really good at it. And she was like, got it.
But so she takes two knives because they're in a refinery. We find out later that they're on a floating oil refinery.
An oil tanker.
Yeah, they're on an oil tanker. And so they can't, when the oil, they're shooting and they start spilling oil everywhere. And they're like, one spark could ignite this whole place.
Get your knives, boys.
True, but okay.
But so they get, knives out. And she takes two knives, straps them to her shoes, and uses them like ice skates, and has this crazy, you know, spinning around, knifing people. And again, it can't be violent because it's PG-13, but the idea of it was clever and original. And I'm just like, well, this is cool.
I saw this in The Transporter. That's all I'm saying.
You didn't see that.
Yes. He puts, like, bike clamps on his feet and starts, like, swirling around in this oil and starts beating the shit out of people.
Okay, well,
I think it's in the first one.
That does sound a little close, but yeah. but I'm like ice skating. I'm like, that's really crazy.
I'm almost positive that's the first movie where he straps like bike.
Oh, this movie sucks. so there's that kind of a cool sequence, and then what ends up happening is they throw all these smoke grenades and they're different colors, and I
looked like something out of the Suicide Squad.
I mean, it's basically from the original Kingsman. When those heads start exploding, it just goes around in like a rainbow instead of like showing gore.
Yeah,
like I felt like that was a trademark of Matthew Vaughn doing that again.
I could kind of see that. But visually, you know, he does have that visual flair with his action sequences. And I took it as that the colors and everything were the book. Really, there were smoke grenades and there was shooting. But she does the whirly bird to him and gets him up and he's shooting in a circle and smokes everywhere. And that's embellished for that's book five.
Oh, okay.
Is what I take the craziness of it is.
So they're trying to upload the silver bullet to Sam Jackson, and of course they get it going for a little bit and it gets stopped, and Catherine O'Hara ends up playing this music box, and it's the trigger for
then she says like a numeric code. She starts reading like 9.
Yeah.
I was like 8675309. Yeah.
Jenny.
Yes.
Ellie. Sorry. So of course there's a big fight, and Sam Rockwell will not fight her. And earlier in the movie, he was like, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go down this hallway. I'm going to shoot everybody. And you're just going to stomp on their heads. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, the human head, very vulnerable. It's very brittle. All you got to do is spin like you're like chubby checker.
Twist and stomp.
And
she won't do it.
She can't do it because she's a normal human being. So we get to this scene here where, of course, Sam Rockwell's on the ground and she's going to stomp his head. And we get this mysterious person who we've seen a couple times, once in a flashback with Argyle as Henry Cavill, who was like his sidekick, kind
Carrie
of.
Carrie or something?
Kia.
Kira.
Okay.
And she gets shot. And of course, you know, Henry Cavill has to go.
But they hinted at this the whole time.
Yeah, a fan sent in a letter to Ellie that says, if you shoot him, if a bullet goes through this one spot, like, it'll miss everything and it'll look like they're dead, but they're not. And, of course, that comes back.
Yeah. She has to shoot Sam Rockwell point blank. Bryan Cranston believes she's on his side.
Right.
Then she goes and hacks into whatever and tries to upload the list to Sam Jackson. And then Sam Rockwell wakes up. And that's how you get the big fight sequence.
Right.
But the person that sent it in, the fan, is dun-dun-dun.
The actual Kia from the book.
It's Kira.
It is Kira?
It's Kira.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Kia. Yeah. And of course,
Ariana DeBose.
Yes, but in the book, they called her Hyundai.
Yeah, that's. No one will ever find my secret identity. Yeah.
Toyota. She shows up. She hits Catherine O'Hara. The music box breaks. She snaps out of it. She doesn't crush Sam Rockwell's face. They upload the file, and everything is off to the races. And then, of course, they get on the boat, and they have. What I liked about this, and I wasn't sure. You know, the actor Neil McDonough?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know he's like hardcore Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he will not do any scenes where he has to kiss another woman.
Yep.
Will not do it under any circumstances, which is fine. Like, that's your prerogative. So
maybe you shouldn't have been an actor.
Fair.
Go on.
Fair.
Yeah. It just seems so interesting that acting doesn't somehow excuse that. Like, I just...
I don't know.
Is God really going to get mad at you because you're acting?
I think of Alan Richardson, who I sent that thing, where it's like, oh man, he's way into Jesus, and he does not care about that thing.
But I think there's definitely...
Watching Reacher season 2, he don't give a...
You do what you do, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know.
It's whatever.
Yeah.
But there were moments in this, and I was like, I wonder if Bryce Dallas Howard is, like, hardcore religious, because they just wouldn't do it. Like, they'd get close, and they'd break off. And then, of course, they
does she not kiss Chris Pratt in those Jurassic World movies?
I don't
there
know.
There are a couple in that third one. They are living together.
I don't
together.
Remember anything from well, those movies.
Yeah, I just remember Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Yes, as
she's
you
She's probably
should.
Like my number one crush.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she's oh, amazing. Yeah.
She's like, I feel like Ross, whereas like I might laminate the list and then I'm screwed. it's Carey Mulligan.
Oh, okay. It's
absolutely okay. Carey Mulligan.
I just think she's like gorgeous, but also like adorable.
Fair.
You know what I mean? She's just
I
got
do.
Like that perfect.
Yeah. What's the what's that line from Crazy Stupid Love?
I know. It's that crazy combination of sexy cute. Cute. It, yeah. That's her to me.
It is interesting that his wife does resemble Bryce Dallas Howard.
There's something yeah. there. Pale redhead? Yeah.
Pale redhead. You want to edit that redhead. Part out?
Oh, redhead. It's, yeah. Doesn't that kind of go with it?
I mean, I guess that's fair.
How many tan redheads do you know?
Bad news bears, brother. If you get a tan redhead, something's not real. One of the two right? of them is not real.
Well, hopefully it's the red hair that's not real.
Or fake tan.
Okay, I was just like, you don't want to date somebody doing blackface.
That's true. That does put a hamper on our relationship.
Yeah, yeah. It should, at least.
Yeah, it should. Yeah.
Unless you want to be a GOP congressman. Go on.
So, yeah, so they're on this boat, and they take off, and there, Ellie is...
I'm wearing a Jurassic Park shirt.
You are wearing a Jurassic Park shirt.
I won't wear a Jurassic World shirt, though.
Nobody should. Right. That first one's not bad.
No, the first one's good. The first, one first good. One's good, but I... It bums me out that they rebranded everything in the theme park in Hollywood
yep.
and probably eventually will do in Orlando.
Have you been on the Velocicoaster?
No, I heard it's amazing, though.
Oh, I wouldn't do it.
Is it amazing?
I was there
oh,
the day.
The line was too... We had to choose between that or the Hulk.
I heard it's the best, like, one of the best things out
yes.
there.
It looked too intense for me. On oh, post, but I was there the day it opened.
Oh.
Because, like, and just coincidentally, and like, the Today Show was there. Or Good Morning America? The Today Show was there. Yeah. And Keenan Ivory... Keenan Thompson was in the park and but like the line from the second they opened the park the wait time was like 4.5 hours.
When we were there 2 years ago last year, three years ago it never went under like 3 hours.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm not doing
but it
that.
Bums me out because Jurassic Park is so cool and they're rebranding everything Jurassic World because those are the newer movies. It's like Jurassic
just,
World stuff isn't cool.
Look,
Jurassic
just
Park.
Wait. And then the reboot's right. going to come out.
Yeah,
it's going to be fine.
I can't wait for Jurassic Park Survive. I think that's going to be awesome.
What is that?
That's the game where you're stuck on the island after Hammond and Grant and
Sattler
just leave
your poor ass there?
Well, you're just stuck, you know? Like,
wasn't there already a game similar to that? Like Jurassic Park Survivor or something? It features like a female
well, that's,
protagonist?
That's the new one's called that.
I feel like there was a game that came out about 20 years ago that had...
Well, there is an older game that's... similar, I guess, kind of.
Is this Circle of Wizards, or what are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, I was just trying to say, that's cool, and it's a Jurassic Park game, and so I hope that they eventually bring back Park as opposed
that's
to
fair. That. That's fair. They will, when the movie comes
so
out.
So Cavill
so, yeah,
and Sheena
well,
Kiss.
Yes,
and then,
yeah, which would have been fantastic. But
that's my book five. Yeah.
So Ellie is giving like a press tour, basically, and people are asking questions, and you know she's pointing out that like,
Is that Danny McBride from Eastbound and Down? Who
well,
is that?
There's
that mullet, that
greasy
mullet.
It is hilarious mullet. Because he's got this mullet, but you're looking at his arms, you're like, oh, damn, that guy
a big
is
guy.
Whipped. But she's going through each character, and she said, you know, this one thought she was going to be the next Steve Jobs, so she took all the technology, monetized it, and she became the
I'm
new
glad
Steve
they didn't
Jobs.
Wizard of Oz it. I thought, was this all fake? Did
yeah,
we just,
right, right,
did
right.
we just watch the book and not that they were real?
It was
like,
all real people.
That would have been a bummer. But
yeah. And then the guy's like, you know, the guy's like, did anybody have any questions? And then there's somebody that stands up in the back with a mullet, and he's like, I got a question with this really like... Henry Cavill, I've never heard him do an accent, an American accent besides like
the
middle of America.
One, yeah.
Yeah. But so hearing, and he's like,
about that Argyle.
Yeah. So, and then we're just like, well,
was he based on someone or something like
right.
that? And then everyone, and, you know, she's like, what?
Looks right
so
at him. Of course
apparently
it's
her subconscious is hiding more than
yes.
she even knows about and that Argyle is. And then.
The secret ending
the
is
the post-credits scene is
the guy we open on the Kingsman bar and this, you know, this guy is given the code and, you know, the bartender's like, you must really be in some big trouble if they're sending you to me. And we find out that it's young Argyle.
Aubrey Argyle.
So there we are. And then the Kingsman something or other. Yeah. I don't know what.
So, but I don't know or think that they're really making that movie. I thought that was like a movie.
No,
it's a book within
no,
a movie.
No. There's at the end of that. There's like a tag where it says this is the next movie. Like
but I thought that was
Argyle Year One or something.
I know, but I thought that was in like her book tour, like her books are so popular, they're making the movies. I didn't know if that was a real.
I think that's real.
I think the goal is because also if you think about it from a budget standpoint, they can bring back Henry Cavill for 5 minutes because it's
a young kid.
It's a young kid playing.
They actually have a plan to turn Argyle into at least a trilogy.
Okay. Wow.
Well, based on its $18 million opening weekend.
$200 million budget.
I'm going to say that that's probably not going to
occur. It's so weird because I think February is a dead month.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, the Draft House, which is my favorite theater. Usually for first run movies. So mine wasn't. Mine was like 3/4 full.
Were you in the Big Show?
Yeah.
No.
I swear. I went at 6 o'clock.
Wow. Okay. So I went to the 11 a.m. Big Show at Alamo and was one of 6 people in there. And I'm going, okay, it's going to be full tonight. I look on the app. It is empty all night for every show.
I went to the 6 p.m. show and it was about 3/4 of the way full.
But I'll tell you what, that wasn't until 6 p.m., which I knew that I'm like, oh, well, if Alamo is sold out for everything when it comes out and this is empty, this movie's going to do
terrible. First run stuff, they usually don't sell out. It's the older stuff. Uh-huh. Like, if you want to go see Pulp Fiction, you better get your tickets, 4 weeks in advance, because that thing's going
to
sell out.
Yeah. Every movie I try to see at Alamo, if I book same day, it's almost full. So I just, this did not do well. I don't think it deserved to bomb. I really think it's a fun movie. It definitely isn't as good as it.
I mean, there's nothing else out. Yeah. There's nothing else to go see.
Do you think it's because people know it's an Apple movie and it's just going to land on streaming? Like,
I think that's, I just don't think, for the average moviegoer,
I just don't think they care.
There. Yeah.
I just don't
think. That's also true.
I just don't, for whatever reason, I just don't think it clicks with people.
I
wonder if people also got burned out on the trailer, because when you went to movies like in January and December, it felt like the Argyle trailer wasn't for every single one, and people got tired of it.
I'm just trying to figure out what makes an audience, I mean, big names, action, it seems like a fun date movie. I'm trying to think, what made people not go to
this? Wait until Madam Web makes $500 million.
Dude.
No way.
I'll be amazed
if that. It's not going to.
I know we thought that about Venom.
That's true.
That is an anomaly.
No, that's not, though.
But they did it twice.
Because Venom is insanely popular.
That character is popular. Shell Corporation. Something is not right about those Venom box office.
Is that
everybody from Sound of Freedom was buying tickets for
friends.
There's
something not right. When that movie did so well and the sequel was terrible and it made more or the same, there's just something going on.
Anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21, and on Letterboxd at the same.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And Steve, where can they find you?
I'm on Facebook and Twitter at The God Cavs.
I wore shorts today because I wanted to compete with Steve.
I appreciate that.
There was no reason.
You can try.
Yeah, I was.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of extras. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Marion's father left her mother for his secretary.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.